Hi, this is Atish Katpal, and I'm going to give a talk on my paper titled Analyzing Compute versus Storage Trade-off for Video-Aware Storage Efficiency. My co-authors being Mandar Kulkarni and Ajay Bakre. Well, videos continue to entertain us, and televisions are no longer the only device that we use to actually view them. There are now a plethora of devices, and the trend shows that the number of devices to view these videos has been increasing by the day. We view them on our laptops, our PCs, and whatnot devices that we have today. So a typical video distribution workflow to support this plethora of devices looks something like this. So you have the master copy of your video, which is ingested into persistent storage. And then what you do is that you transcode it into various different formats, which are compatible with the devices that you need to stream these videos to. And hence, when an incoming request comes for a particular video, you map it to the right format, and which is compatible for playing on that device, and basically serve it. Now, we identify a couple of issues with such a video distribution workflow. First one being a very apparent one, that of data explosion. So where essentially you had just one video in terms of content, it's all similar whether it is viewed on an iPhone or a laptop. But for storage, it is actually essentially storing tens to hundreds of thousands of versions of that same video in various different formats, resolutions, and bit rates that you need to keep it in to serve it to various devices. And the other issue that we identify is that we get very poor deduplication across these various versions, which are essentially same at the content level. They differ highly on the data blocks level. That's because when you transcode a video from its master to its derived version, the underlying data bits change completely, even though at a content level when you're viewing the video, it looks the same. So hence you get very poor conventional block-based deduplication across these videos. So now, talking about our approach to basically address some of these problems. So we basically were thinking about what about eliminating some of these unpopular videos and transcoding them on the fly. And we also wanted to keep our solution optimized based on cost, because that's what it boils down to eventually. So our envisioned video distribution workflow looks something like this. So you still have the master copy and the various transcoded versions stored. But what you do next is that you perhaps eliminate a few of these videos based on various popularity metrics. And then if a request comes for one of the eliminated videos, you essentially retranscode it from its master copy, which is never deleted, and serve it to the device that's asking for it. Now let's talk about a few trade-offs when you're considering a transcoding on the fly solution. Clearly, it's not a very intuitive thing to be trading storage for compute. So hence, you need to be careful with what math you're doing. So essentially, what I'm saying is, if you try to optimize on your storage costs a lot, which is that you're trying to eliminate too many videos, you might end up inflating your compute costs, because every time you have to now retranscode these videos and then make it available. Another factor that plays into this thing is that of latency, because now you no longer have to wait for just network latencies, but also transcode-related latencies if you've eliminated these videos. As part of this talk, I'm going to concentrate on just storage and compute trade-offs, and we keep latency-related issues for our future work. So let's talk about cost-effective elimination of videos. Let's start with the assumption that we know that for a particular given video, that when is it going to be accessed next? So I know the delta time between its two consecutive accesses, and I call it t-axis here. Now, in such a situation, it's intuitive to understand that it would be cost effective to eliminate this particular video if the cost of storing it for the t-axis amount of time that I'm confident that it will not be accessed for is actually more than the cost of transcoding it, right? So let's draw a more clear picture around this. Let's assume a cloud storage scenario. So in a cloud storage scenario, basically paying by the time and by the number of bits that you're storing in a typical cloud storage cloud storage vendor. So what happens is that as the time that you're storing that particular video file doubles up, even the cost of storing that video doubles up for you. So the two vary linearly. But what is interesting to note here is that your cost of transcode remains constant, because it's going to take the exact amount of time to transcode a given video, right? And that is not something that's going to change with time, right? As long as you keep the machine that you're trying to transcode it on constant. And hence, what we talk about here is that at some point in time, the two lines are going to intersect. And it is that point of intersection that becomes interesting for us, because storing this particular video file beyond this point of intersection means that you're actually spending more on its storage, while you could have essentially transcoded it on the fly when it was actually asked for. And we actually call this point in time as elimination metric. So in the next slide, I basically put a text-based definition on this. So it's basically the time since video creation, elimination metric, that is, the time since video creation when the cost of storage becomes equal to cost of actually transcoding it. To put some mathematical equations out there, so going by that definition, you can basically define elimination metric, which has units of time as the ratio between the transcoding cost and the storage cost per unit time for a given video. For a more detailed derivation, please refer the paper. So let me take a simple example to make things more clear here. So let's say that for a given video, the amount of time it takes to transcode on a particular machine is 1 hour, and the storage required for storing that same video is around 2 GB. And let's say that the compute cost for the compute cloud vendor you're using is, say, $1,000 per hour. And your storage costs for the storage vendor, cloud vendor that you're using is $1 per GB per hour. Well, then if you just substitute these values into the equation I just showed you, then you find out the elimination metric for this particular video comes to be around 500 hours. So now in such a situation, if the next time for access for this video was known to be 600 hours away, it surely doesn't make economical sense to keep this video for 600 hours because your cost of transcoding is lesser than actually storing it for 600 hours. And hence, such a video becomes a good candidate for your elimination. So typically, the lower the value of elimination metric, the easier it would be to eliminate it. And the sooner you could eliminate it, as soon as its popularity goes down below a particular threshold. So with this, we want to do a bunch of analysis. And we used FFmpeg as our transcoding software. And the cost model that we assume is Amazon EC2 plus S3. The data set that we used for our analysis was that we handpicked 8 master video copies from video files from a video source library known as testvid.com. And we handpicked them to, you know, cover a wide variety of characteristics of videos like slow, fast motion, etc. And we transcoded these 8 master videos into 376 derived copies, which were basically derived from 8 popular resolutions and 6 popular containers. So some first-hand observations we made was that the storage footprint for the derived versions in our storage box was actually 8 times more that of just the masters for these videos, and hence backing up our motivation towards this work. And the transcoding software was basically more CPU-bound, wasn't too heavy on memory. And the other observation that again backed our motivation was that we got 0% block-based deduplications across these 384 video versions that we were keeping in our block-based dedupe enabled device. Next, we wanted to see how does the elimination metric actually manifest in face of these real-world videos that we were trying to test with. And it turned out that the elimination metric values that are plotted in the units of days in this graph actually turned out to be in the range of days and not like light years that it takes for your storage costs to become equivalent to your compute costs. So that was an interesting observation. The other thing to note from this graph is that your elimination metric really depends on the kind of coding encoding algorithm you're using for your transcoding. For example, for a video which was encoded in LibX 264, which is a high definition encoding algorithm, the elimination metric was pretty high as compared to something like FLV, which is not very strict on its coding, on its quality, and hence the codecs are much lesser compute intensive. Next, we wanted to compare how does the elimination metric vary across videos of various resolutions. So the thing to note here was that, what I plotted in various different colors are the video codecs, and on the x-axis you see that the resolution of the video goes from lowest to highest. And the interesting thing to note here was that your elimination metric actually decreases as the resolution of your video increases. So, which basically led us into the insights that your compute resource utilization does not increase in the same proportion as you go from lower resolution videos to higher resolution videos as compared to how your storage resource utilization increases, and hence the observation. Next, we wanted to see that for the various videos with different video characteristics that we had in our test suite, how did the elimination metric vary with the various characteristics of these videos? And the observation here was quite intuitive in the sense that if you take a look at a video which had just a static building shot in it, a 30-second static building shot, the elimination metric was around 15 days. While for a video with detailed scenes and a lot of zoom put into it, the elimination metric actually shot up to around 49 days. So basically, it's the content of your video that the elimination metric depends on. Now, that done, having put some numbers on the table, let's discuss what are the other strategies that you have for eliminating a video, and is it really necessary to eliminate a video in the first place? So one of the strategies would be to never eliminate, which would really work if all your videos were popular, because it would just not make sense to be throwing in so much compute on these videos and transcoding them every time they are accessed, because they're just popular. And compute, as we know, is much more expensive than storage. The other strategy would be to always eliminate. So you just keep the master versions of the video, and whatever are the derived versions, you just recreate them on the fly when they're actually asked for. Well, such an approach would be good only if all your videos are unpopular. And what use is a video library if all your videos are unpopular, right? So this extreme strategy really doesn't work. And hence, what we basically propose through our work is something that gets the best out of both these strategies, which is some of your videos are going to be popular and while others are going to be unpopular. And hence, you would like to eliminate in a cost-effective manner by leveraging elimination metric. And in here, a video is tagged as unpopular really when its t-axis, which is the time interval between consecutive axes, happens to be more than the elimination metric itself. And of course, through this particular work of ours, you continue to store popular videos and do not keep retranscoding them. Well, that said, there is still a challenge to be handled, and that is that how do you know what's the time axis? At what exact time the video is going to be accessed again, right? And that is something that just cannot be known. Well, we talk about a few solution directions there. One would be the more obvious one, that of predicting, your access patterns based on whatever history you have in your video library. So you use statistical techniques and you come to something called as t-predicted, which is the predicted time interval between access of a given video. And hence, whenever your predicted time interval happens to be more than the elimination metric, you choose to eliminate those videos. And the other thing that we talk about in our work here is leveraging something like online algorithms, which are used for caching popularly. So whenever you are using LRU, you are still not confident that the block you are evicting, it might as well be asked next up by the workload. But you go with a certain policy and it usually works. So in here we talk about eliminating your video if it has not been accessed since EM amount of time, right? So if it is so unpopular that it's not being accessed since EM amount of time, then just go ahead and delete it. Well, we argue in such a scenario you would do maximum twice as bad as what would be the optimal strategy, which is when you actually knew you knew somehow that when the video is going to be accessed next. And of course, we continue to, this is still better than a never eliminate strategy, in which case, as I told earlier, your costs just linearly increase with the amount of time that you're storing your video for. So with that, I'd like to summarize my work. So what we have basically done is that we've talked about a kind of counterintuitive way of handling videos, which is trading compute for storage, trading storage for compute here, and we define an elimination metric to basically aid in those decisions. And we also talk about a few elimination strategies like online algorithms and access pattern prediction. Well, some of the next steps that we plan to take in this direction would include prediction of elimination without having to transcode your video in the first place. So like I showed in some of the slides before, that the elimination metric really depends on various video characteristics like high motion, blur, and et cetera, and also depends on the resolution of the target video that you're trying to transcode. And it also depends on what kind of codecs you're using for transcoding these videos. And hence, perhaps it would be a good idea to be able to predict the elimination metric of these videos beforehand without having to transcode. The other thing is that we would like to evaluate our work with real-world video access patterns and see how much cost cuttings and how much storage savings we are actually able to achieve. And we'd like to handle latencies going forward and also try and define an elimination metric for a data center wherein your resources are actually limited. So if I have eliminated lots of videos, then I cannot elastically scale my compute resources to satisfy the demand of high amount of transcode that needs to be done. So I need to be careful there. With that, I'd also like to talk a bit about the related work. So there was a paper presented in last year, Hot Storage, titled VidDedupe, So this paper really, we differentiate with this paper in the sense that they also talk about using transcode on the fly, right, for eliminating video versions which can be derived from their masters. But they take the other approach. They assume that they do not have any information, any metadata information about the relationships between videos. So they basically take a bunch of random videos and now detect, they run clustering algorithms on it to detect the similarity between these videos and then establish the relationships. And again, they don't talk about a cost-effective way of eliminating these videos. There's also work out there in Hot Cloud 2009 where they talked about maximizing efficiency by trading storage for computation. So we actually inspire our work from that paper and apply it to video distribution use cases. And of course, there are papers existing out there which talk about being able to predict and forecasting video access patterns. And also there's work out there about intelligent caching of video files based on their popularity. Well, with that, I'd like to open for questions.
Hi, Fitz Nolan, Yale University. I have a question and kind of an observation after that. So the question is, is the latency reasonable for transcoding on the fly for any kind of realistically popular video service? Do you have any notion for that? I know you said latency is future work, but that's kind of just my baseline question.
So we have a few ideas. So you can basically start streaming your video as soon as your first transcoded bytes of the video are available, right? So that's one way of doing it. You can chunk your video up, and you can find out the elimination metric values for these individual chunks, right? And if the elimination metric for a few chunks is very high, indicating that your transcode resource requirements will be high, you probably don't eliminate those chunks of the video.
Okay.
So those are the kind of ideas we have.
That makes sense. And then my second sort of observation is once you go to the feature work and do the latency, if you're in the cloud, you don't really have, I don't know if you have guarantees of variability of, if you're sharing resources with other users, other companies, other programs, your transcoding may be affected and that may affect your latency as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, do you agree or do you disagree with any notion of that?
Sure, that is why we have these quality of service kind of papers
so
being
you
published.
Rely on that, then,
yeah, we definitely do, yeah. But as such, in a cloud-based scenario, the resources are much more elastic as compared to a data center, wherein you might actually have no resources to schedule your transcoding tasks at all.
Cool.
So
thanks,
yeah.
Cool work.
Thank you.
I'm Gopinath from Indian Institute of Science. In JPEG, you have the notion of progressive encoding.
Yeah.
Is there, across various resolutions, don't you have any such in MPEG kind of file or this video kind of thing, don't you have any such progressive encoding aspects so that you can see some kind of
compression
savings across?
Sure. You're talking about compression, right?
Yeah, basically the various formats, don't they have any of this, just like JPEG,
mm-hmm.
you have more resolution, you have more, there is some base information, you add additional bits so that you get higher and higher resolutions.
Right. So they actually do the same things with videos as well. But the notion here is that this progressive encoding is limited to the range of bytes within the same file and not across various JPEG files, right? So within the same file, they still leverage those progressive encoding techniques. So if in case you have a static building video like I talked about, they will use progressive encoding to store it in a most efficient way. The codecs will take care of that. But they do it.
But across resolutions, there should be some similarity, right?
Across resolutions, so you're talking about packing up different videos of different resolutions into one particular tar file?
The same video.
The same video,
video across different resolutions. Don't they have any similarity at all?
At the data level, no, unfortunately. So because you transcode it at a frame-wise level, and each frame changes completely, and hence the bits that actually define that frame change completely as well. So, yeah. There's no comment.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Do you have any thoughts of extending that into the cost of transferring? So for example, I have a service plan in Europe for cell phones where you reach your maximum, and unlike in the US when they charge you more dollars for extra bandwidth,
mm-hmm.
there they actually slow down your transfer. So I'm not actually offsetting computation with storage, but rather I'm sort of looking for a transfer of data that's at the low resolution, therefore lower bandwidth. Do you have any thoughts of using your model and accounting for bandwidth sort of immediate bandwidth needs, which are much more sort of timely than your when is the next time video is going to be used.
Okay. So I might ask you to repeat your question, but one clarification here is that we do actually consider network costs as well. So we kind of absorb them into compute costs. So what we basically talk in the paper about is that, when you have to transcode,
I understood, but extending that idea where the bandwidth is something that's sort of immediate, right? So you're looking, what's the likelihood that a same version is going to be used, same resolution is going to be used next? Right. And if I predict it correctly, then I'm going to keep it because it's within the window.
Sure.
In the bandwidth thing, it's much more sort of opportunistic where, it's end of the month, I've already used my plan, and now I'm going to be transferring a video at a much different resolution. So can you kind of deal with the jitter of bandwidth and maybe decouple that from the cost of computation? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Okay, decoupling the network costs. Yeah, again, I think those quality of service things come into picture, right? So you kind of want your network to perform at a certain quality of service again.
Right. Thanks. Yeah. Okay. Any more questions? All right. Well, thanks, our speaker.
Thank you.